Hello and welcome to this CityWire broadcast in association with River and Mercantile. I'm Richard Lander of CityWire. My guest today is Al Bryant, who looks after River and Mercantile's emerging market strategies from his base in Chicago. So welcome, Al. I trust you're well. We're all a little down here after last night's football loss, but, well, you know, there's always the World Cup next year, so let's not be too down. So let's talk emerging markets. You've been investing in these markets for around 14 years now, and maybe let's start by saying, you know, discussing how's the market changed over that time.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Richard. Thanks for having me. And yes, it's clear at this point, having spent enough time looking at Asia and emerging markets, that we're calling it very much a changed landscape as you look at the composition of what we call the emerging market index, you know, whether it's from a geographical standpoint or a sectoral standpoint. There have been significant changes, and probably the critical one has been this transformation of the index from a very cyclical-oriented market with a lot of energy and miners, perhaps 10 to 15 years ago as we went through the giant commodity supercycle. And over really the last 10 years, there's been this transformation with the rise of China's weight in the index itself and the rise of the digital and the technology champions of China, Korea, and Taiwan, to the point now where you have a very interesting, I think, balanced market in terms of how you compare it to a lot of the other European, U.S. markets. You have an index now that's very, very balanced. And many investors nowadays, they still have this legacy view of EM in the sense that it is just a cyclical play. So it creates unintended consequences for how flows come in and out of EM. But our view is that you have a very strong balance between cyclical value side in EM and a digital forward-looking opportunity set in EM.
Great. And you mentioned the inflows and the outflows. So and it has been a feature of the past decade or more that there's a trend to rush in and a trend to rush out. Now seems to have been, certainly the first half of 2021 seems to have been pretty strong for inflows. Why is that happening?
Well, yeah, I think it ends up being a little bit of a recovery play, but I think to tie it back to this change landscape and the consumption story in EM, you've had a very good handling of the crisis in East Asia. So China, Korea, Taiwan have handled the COVID-19 crisis quite well, and their economies, they were first in and they've been first out. So their economic recoveries were primarily funded by providing the work from home solutions for the rest of the world and even providing a lot of the ingredients that go into some of the vaccines. So you've had an economic recovery that has led in Asia. And that certainly created some interest in EM last year, and China had some significant leadership. What you really have now, as you look forward, is the rest of EM looking for this vaccine recovery. So I think flows are now starting to move back in and looking to take advantage of that second or third leg of the global recovery from COVID-19. And there should be, I think, better confidence in making higher and longer stable allocations to EM, because a lot of investors, we see this ourselves, are looking at a change landscape in EM in terms of risk and how you think about risk going forward, because it's not this cyclical index of old. There's a far more stable consumption story behind EM. The financial houses of most governments, most corporates, and even consumers in EM are in a lot better shape than they were 10 years ago. You don't have this concern of some kind of debt implosion in EM anymore. And I think that allows for higher, more stable allocations. And as these financial houses have gotten in better order, you also see that rates across most of EM, the core of EM, are at decade lows. Inflation is, for the most part, under control. There's been a few hot spots where the central banks have responded, and I think this rise in inflation will be somewhat temporary, but these are all reasons to have greater confidence in EM and to continue those flows going forward.
Just to go back to first principles, your job, you know, no one has such a large choice as an EM manager. You've got command economies run by autocrats. That's a polite word for it. You've got hyper-capitalist economies out there. You've got commodity exporters, commodity importers. I mean, how do you look at this vast universe and say, I'm going to pick these 30, 40, 50 stocks?
You have to have the Swiss Army knife, if you will, to address all the opportunity sets and the risks and the pitfalls that come along with investing in EM, and having enough scars and war wounds of learning lessons on what to do and what not to do in EM. But it really, the way that we try to approach the opportunity set in EM is from a stock picking fundamental bottom up standpoint. So can we find the best ideas across Asia, across LATAM, across EMEA? But at the same time, we've spent a lot of time with the macro team at River Mercantile trying to better understand and manage through the macro risks that are inherent in EM, and particularly in a lot of the smaller markets. Big opportunities in some of the smaller weighted countries around EM, but you have to know when it's safe to be in these areas and when it's not. I liken it to, you can find from a stock picker, you can always find interesting cheap opportunities, but if it ends up being one of those examples of a great house on a really bad block, meaning this is a cheap company that's in a market or an economy that has economics decelerating, maybe the credit cycle decelerating, that cheapness is an illusion. And that is, you know, the biggest trouble you can get into in EM is finding value traps. And most markets are littered with those. And if you can get that lightning in a bottle to identify when you can find cheapness in an accelerating economy, you can really ride the wave in EM. So for us, the labor love for our team on the stock selection side has been something that I've been working on for 15 years. And we call our investment process the industrial life cycle, or ILC for short. And we come at investing in EM from very much a core point of view, trying to identify the best value-creating ideas in what you would call the growth parts of the market, which are ample in EM, quality parts of the market, as well as value. And that's, for us, the critical demarcation in EM is defining the difference between what a cyclical is and what a value is in EM. And again, going back to this change landscape, investors are not looking to increase those flows into EM just to buy into cyclicals.
Right, so you've got a lot of stock selection in there, but what are the macro gut people at R&M telling you when you go through this process?
Yeah, we've had a very big transition in EM in the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 quarters. And the interesting thing for us is that you've had 5 years of significant growth leadership in EM. And that's also been taking place in the US as well. But with this recovery that started in Asia, and it's now progressed to the US, and it looks like it's starting to, the baton is now being handed off to Europe. That has created really, with all the stimulus ongoing in the world, there's been a rising tide of growth globally. And that tends to coincide with investor sentiment moving away from looking for good secular growth stories and trying to find good value stories. When the tide is rising, it lifts all the boats. And we've now had this cyclical kick in EM. So oil's risen, a lot of the metals have risen as China has been restocking. And I think from a macro standpoint now, the key considerations are, what are the next legs of growth? Is it gonna be another cyclical story for the next 2 to 3 quarters, or are sentiments going to move more towards this quality side and truly trying to distinguish value from cyclical going forward? And that takes you to nuanced approaches within China, within Korea, Taiwan, and then really Southeast Asia, and even Latin America. So trying to find those opportunities where there's still room to run on the valuations and look to continue to improve their profitability and improve their balance sheets as you go forward. And that's the key difference between cyclicals and value.
So you might be sort of less interested in Taiwan Semiconductor, Samsung, some of the big Chinese giants. Are you sort of shifting your balance from those companies, and where are you moving to?
Some of the most exciting parts of the quality spectrum within EM comes back to Taiwan Semi in Taiwan and Samsung Electronics in South Korea. And these are at the crux of those local markets and for global investors as well. The latter, though, the Tencents and Alibabas within China, these have been digital champions that have really significantly contributed to that changed landscape in the EM over the last 10 years. And they have monetized significant value as they've proliferated online retail and gaming and payments, cloud, streaming. But what has wound up happening is they've moved into bricks and mortar, and they've moved into payments, they're moving into finance. All these additional incremental investments have taken what were 20 to 30% ROI businesses down to 10% ROI businesses. And at the same time, the growth rates have moved from 30 to 20, and the insinuation is that those growth rates will continue to move down. And this has all happened at the same time that the Chinese government has started to take a greater interest in competition and in the use of data and in regulation. And this key consideration for us is just watching where the profitability is going for these very large weights in the index. And our view is that the incremental investments that have pulled down those ROIs are going to continue to pull those ROIs down. And that for us has led to a quandary in terms of looking at what is your software weight in EM, what is your weight in China, and if you're not keen on Tencent and Alibaba, you need to find other places to put that money. And the way that you would look at our portfolio at this point is you will see an underweight to China by 3 to 4%, an underweight to software by the same amount. And we've been sifting through all of our screens within China, within software, within the growth part of the market, which those companies still reside in, but there's clearly a transition where they will be migrating from growth to later life cycle parts of the market, and trying to redistribute those active positions. And that's taken us to smaller cap software plays in China. It's taken us to solar power plays in China, and it's taken us to home building plays in Brazil. And this is just the constant back and forth that one has to work on within EM.
Right. Okay. So we've talked a lot about China. Which other countries and companies are you shifting your focus to at the same time?
Where we started looking then, where the way we'll think through capital allocation from a country standpoint is where have you seen economics bottoming? Where have you seen valuations bottoming out? And if you can find good ideas in those types of markets, you have a nice margin of safety, and you have a significant opportunity for year-over-year profit growth going forward. And so that has led us to markets like Malaysia, Indonesia, Latin America, whether it be Mexico or Brazil, because we do see that these economies have all been hit to a much larger degree than you ever saw in China, Taiwan, South Korea. So they have not seen the same timed recoveries economically, whether you look at PMIs or GDPs coming out of those markets. But it seems like we are at a point where the growth numbers are not going to get any worse. The lockdowns are starting to unwind. The vaccine rollouts are in the works. And the markets have not yet really fully priced that in. The catch-up play between EM China and then the rest of China is still very, very early stages. And that's really the way that we've been thinking about it. But with saying that, that doesn't mean that you can go run an EM portfolio that is 100% in Malaysia and Latin America.
And what works for you outside China, say in Latin America? What are the type of companies that appeal to you down there?
Yeah, in Brazil, we've just picked up a interesting company called Duratex, which is more of a small mid-cap company, but this is in more of a late stage value slash cyclical type position. But they're a leading manufacturer of flooring and lumber for homes and for furniture, and they own a lot of their own forest in Brazil, which is very very properly managed from an environmental sensitivity standpoint. And they, in the last few years, they have really cleaned up their balance sheet. They have taken their debt load from 40% down to 20%, and really right-sizing their business, focusing on a couple other niche areas that include ceramic tiles and working on viscous staple fibers, which is using wood pulp to create really a polyester alternative. So they're finding interesting new ways to really monetize the asset base that they have in this forestry business. And they've started to improve their ROI. So Brazil went through an awful downturn in 2015. They were just starting to come out of that as the pandemic hit. So this downturn has continued. And I think just as you see in the US, you see in the UK, you see in really the rest of the world, there's a significant housing shortage. And this is likely to be a theme for investment and consumption for the next 5 to 10 years as home building and home starts catch up to where demand is, especially if we're all gonna continue to work from home as you and I are doing today. But Duratex is one of these companies that we think hits the spot. They're in the right part of the life cycle at the same time that Brazil looks to be coming out of their downturn from COVID. And there will be not only new home starts, there will be ongoing refurbishments and then restocking of furniture as we go forward. So it's not the same as digital online China, but there is plenty of upside as management continues to weave their way through the recovery there.
Right. I mean, you know, the words Brazil and forest sort of instill fear into a lot of people when they see what's going on, but it's good to hear that company's got it right. I mean, how much of what you're doing and researching and buying into it is driven by concerns about ESG governance and particularly energy transition? Are there a lot of opportunities there for you?
There are, and I think there's significant low-hanging fruit in EM as it relates to ESG, and this has been a big part of our work for the team in the last, I'd say, 24 months, trying to ever increasingly incorporate ESG considerations into the portfolio. And if you look back over the 8+ years that we've been running this fund, you can see that it's had a very consistent positive ESG profile within EM. And we're working diligently to ever improve that spread. But yeah, EM is part of the problem for ESG, and it's also part of the solution. The increase in emissions, the growth in emissions going forward is coming from places like China, like India, as you know, they have premium growth rates, they have power needs, and that creates emissions. But on the other side, they've all been big signatories to helping to be part of this problem. So the scale that has come out of solar power at this point for the entire world is been a very big strategic point of view for the Chinese government. And so we do see, you know, there are opportunities for solutions and investment opportunities in China. We've recently put a name into the portfolio that's in the A-share market in China called Sungrow Power. So this is a growth stage company. They have 27% market share in making power inverters for solar farms. And these are for large industrial scale solar farms that at this point, you look at the demand given all of the infrastructure spend that's being earmarked here in the US and in Europe and really China, India, on down the line, there's a significant opportunity for profitable growth going forward. Sungrow Power has, I believe, 27% market share in making these power inverters. So this is creating the conversion in the power cycle from direct current to alternating current, so it can come from the solar panel into our homes and run our computers. This is an innovative company. They have 33% of their employees working in the R&D lab there, investing in making high quality hardware solutions along with high quality software solutions. And this always comes back to this energy transformation is going to come down to both hardware and smart software.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, you've got companies like this that we've never heard of that are doing amazing things and growing at a fast rate. I mean, is it stories like this that you can, you know, the UK investors who are listening to this, the wealth managers, they've probably got, I don't know, I think it's something like 2 to 3% of their allocations to emerging markets. So, I mean, what would you say to them to persuade them that it should be, you know, several times bigger than that if they want to do the right thing by their clients?
I think, the market insights we have are that this 2 to 3% allocation to EM is pretty prevalent in the UK. It's very different from US allocations, which are more market weight. Which, if you look at global equity markets, I think EM is anywhere from probably 11 to 12, 13% of global markets. So having a 2 to 3% allocation is significantly betting against this EM story. And you think back through the what we've talked about here, the change landscape, the digital opportunities, the cyclical opportunities, the value opportunities, and then even these ESG solutions for the world. I think this is the time. There's far less financial risk embedded in EM at this point. It's not as cyclical as it used to be. There is a significant opportunity in the rise of the Chinese consumption story of trade within EM to I think further stabilize the growth story, and it's at a discount. EM has been at a discount for 10, 15, 20 years to the rest of the world, but I think you have a far greater stability at this point to monetize this and take advantage of whether it's Sungrow or whether it's Duratex in Brazil.
Okay, and just finally looking forward, you know, you talked about this 5, 10 years. How different do you think the EM investment landscape will be if we just fast forward 5 years from here?
I think it'll be, my guess will be that you continue to see the rise in China as an overall weight in EM, and you have such opportunity there. As we also see, opportunity in South Asia and in Latin America, but the sentiment cycle on China has come full circle in the last 10 years. We used to always have investors telling us, "Well, we're buyers on the EM story, but we're terrified of China." And that's really come full circle now to, "Can you just run a China-only portfolio for us?" And I think that's exciting. The folks that manage all the EM indices are going to have an issue as China continues to grow at a greater clip than a lot of the rest of the world. It will be 40, it'll be 45, it'll be 50% of the index, and I think it's just it is the 1,000-pound gorilla that you can't ignore in your portfolios. Like even if you're only 2 to 3% in EM, I don't even know what that means that your China weight is, but you're significantly betting against I think one of the key strategic growth and profit stories that investors are faced with for the next 10 to 15 years, and it's a very different story than it was 10 years ago, and you really had to rethink that allocation.
Sounds exciting. Al Bryant of River and Mercantile, thank you very much for joining us today. I think it's been a fascinating discussion. So much exciting stuff going on in the emerging markets. And hope to speak to you again very soon.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, Richard.